ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hello from David Rutledge. Welcome to the Philosopher's Zone, and I hope your new year is getting off to a great start. For many of us, the new year signals a new chapter in education. If you're heading back to school, or maybe your kids are heading back to school, for a lot of us, this is a time for thinking about books and fees and schedules and timetables and subjects and all of the things that structure the process of getting an education. One thing that we maybe don't think about so often is why we should be getting an education in the first place, what it is we're trying to achieve. And at a glance, the answer to that question seems self-evident. We educate ourselves and our children because education is good. Education delivers valuable skills. It fits us out for employment. It ideally helps us become good citizens, and so on. But then, if we look at those benefits more closely, we find various contradictions in play. For example, if you believe education exists to develop free thinking and autonomy, then how does that square with the idea that education should shape us and indoctrinate us into accepting certain norms and values and hierarchies? If education exists to foster a sense of wonder and to sharpen our curiosity about the world, how does that square with the idea that education should be about getting us ready for the job market? Well, all of these questions and more were thrashed out at a recent forum held at Edith Cowan University in Perth by the Philosophy of Education Society of Australasia. And today we're going to be hearing a panel discussion from that conference on the subject of the aims of education. The speakers are Nin Kirkham, Deputy Head of the School of Humanities at the University of Western Australia, Sam Sterrett, who's a philosophy teacher at Scotch College in Perth and co-host of the educational podcast The Range Project, and Kaya Lee, Assistant Professor in Philosophy of Education at the University of Hong Kong. And the panel is hosted by Laura D'Olimpio, Associate Professor of Philosophy of Education at the University of Birmingham.
The main question that this panel is looking to interrogate is the question about why educate people. When we grab young people and force them into rooms and schools for many hours and many years of their young lives, we'd better have a very good reason for doing so. So what are we aiming at when we say that we want all citizens to be educated? In this discussion, we'll be exploring what education should aim at. And some options might include rationality, critical thinking, knowledge, social justice. There might be vocational aims or political participation, like citizenship aims. So our first question that I'd like to direct to each of our panellists in turn is, what do you think the aim of education is or should be, and why? And to what extent do you think that our education system currently aims towards this? And we'll start with Nin.
Great. Thanks, Laura. It's a big question, so I'll try and narrow it down a little bit, because what I know about is mostly teaching at the tertiary level. So the aim of education, I think, at the tertiary education level should probably be fundamentally that you're teaching people autonomy and flourishing. I know that's going to sound really counterintuitive, because lots of people come to university to get a job, get a qualification, add to their store of knowledge. And traditionally we've talked about universities as being a kind of vessel where we can teach people to be democratic citizens. But ultimately I think you get the other things if you focus on the flourishing and autonomy aspect. I mean, if you teach people to be grown up, well-rounded, thoughtful, free, autonomous agents that are interested in making themselves better and cultivating their dispositions over time, you kind of get the other things along the way, right? So they come for free, but that to me is the focus, is developing the person.
And do you think that universities are successful in aiming at autonomy and flourishing?
Some universities, some parts of some universities, maybe. I mean, sometimes, yeah, sometimes. They're not perfect by any means, but I think the university education as we traditionally think of it, especially for kind of post-school leavers, I think it is especially works really well for. It's just a kind of 3 or 4 year experience that if the students enter into it in the spirit in which it's designed, it has really, really good opportunities to develop them. It's, like I say, it's not a perfect system, but it's got the capacity to really give students that space to find themselves, you know, find out what they want to do and who they are and what they care about and who their people are and all of those things that are kind of at the basis of becoming an adult.
Great, thank you. Sam, what do you think?
I think from a high school perspective, I think, you know, philosophy starts with wonder, and I think we want our kids to go out into the world maintaining that sense of wonder and curiosity for learning. We teach them lots of stuff in, you know, often in siloed ways, but I think all of that intellectual development is really ultimately a vehicle for their moral development at the end of the day and for fostering a sense of ongoing curiosity for the world. And I think some people say in high schools we sometimes beat it out of them towards the latter end of school. But I think that's what education at a high school level should be all about, is maintaining that intrinsic motivation to want to go out and learn things and love what they're learning. So, yeah.
So wonder, and do you think that the education system is currently supportive of encouraging wonder in their students? Your students are laughing, by the way.
They're up the front here. I think it's a bit of a mixed bag, probably as you've said, Nin. That's a complicated question to look across the whole sort of secondary sector and whether that's happening. I think it's happening in pockets in certain ways, and then in other ways I think we're really inhibiting that sense of wonder with over-assessment and those kind of things. I think we need to open up more options, more opportunity, more choice for students to choose where they want to take their learning. And I think schools can do a lot better at that.
Great, thank you. Kaya, what do you think?
So perhaps among the three of us, I probably approach this question more academically. This is a topic that I explored in my dissertation. And there's a reason that I haven't published on this topic. It's because I'm increasingly unclear whether this question, what is the aim of education, is a good question to ask. I have two main reasons. One is the sort of cultural sort of specificity or Western nature of the question, what is the aim of education? And then the second is the vagueness of the question, what is the aim of education? Let me unpack both points a little bit. So ever since moving to HKU, in the University of Hong Kong, where I'm currently at, I started dipping my toes into comparative philosophy and what they call the three teaching, which is Confucianism, Buddhism, and Taoism. I jokingly call them CBD. And by learning these, you know, comparative philosophy and three teachings, I started learning more about Western philosophy, actually, because it kind of helps me sort of understand the Western philosophy from like a outsider perspective. And one thing that I recently learned is that this centrality of the what question is actually a very Western-specific feature. And so in Aristotle, for instance, he begins his inquiry by asking, what is a good life, right? Like this what really plays a central role in Western philosophy. In Eastern philosophical traditions, however, the centrality is not on the what question, but on the how question. So they wouldn't be, you know, so interested or obsessed with this idea of like what the aim of education is. They would rather be asking how one can be educated. And so that's one sort of learning that I recently had. And someone like maybe people in my field, which is analytic philosophy of education, might say something like, well, but the what question still seems really important to address the how question. Without knowing the purpose of education, how can then we answer the question, how should one be educated? So that could be a potential objection to my reservation. And my reply would be that it's not clear to me whether the what question needs to be addressed first in order to answer the how question. So for instance, like, I don't know what health is, but I know how to be healthier. I don't know what the purpose of my life is yet, maybe, but I know how to live a better life by cultivating community of friendship and so on and so forth. So I'm not super clear whether this what is the emotification question is takes precedence over other kinds of questions. Although Western philosophers of education might hope that addressing this question helps us refine the scope of the curriculum, for instance, or, you know, determine the direction of education policy and so on and so forth. But these days, I'm not entirely clear whether this question is an important question to ask. So let's say that Western philosophers are right, and actually we indeed need to ask what the aim of education is. I would recommend narrowing down the scope to the aim of schooling. I see a lot of conflation in the literature between education policy and schooling policy. And when philosophers of education talk about purpose of education, they're most certainly talking about purpose of schooling, right? Like what we can actually control through regulating public schools or private schools and so on and so forth. So I think we should be asking about purpose of schooling first. And my answer to that question would be to, equip children with the skills and dispositions that enable them to live a minimally decent life. I wouldn't go so far as saying flourishing. I think the flourishing literature meets a lot of challenges from skeptics about and any centers on like how demanding that picture is, right? And I think they're I take their point seriously. So minimally decent life.
I think this is a really interesting pushback because flourishing as the aim of education has become increasingly popular in recent years and in the literature. And as you say, it does seem to ask a lot of educators, of schools. And so given that one of the proponents of education flourishing, besides me on this panel, is Nin, maybe Nin can help us to answer some of this pushback.
Look, I mean, to be clear, I'm not a philosopher of education, so I don't have the background that you have in this area, but I like the idea of flourishing. I mean, I think it's a defensible view, and just because you have as your aim for some process, whether that be schooling or education more broadly, at whichever level you specify, as flourishing, and that's a demanding and kind of aspirational goal, I don't think that means that you can't have it as your goal, right? That doesn't mean that you have to always achieve it. It's just like a lot of really important kind of regulatory ideals, it sets a benchmark for us to aim at rather than a kind of minimum standard. But I see what you're saying is if we're talking about the minutiae of, you know, what works, which is not my area, probably something like a kind of minimal standard is what we should be measuring against or something like that. But I think they're different things, you know, what we should measure against and maybe what we should ideally aim at. I don't think they're in conflict necessarily, but maybe I'm wrong.
The only other question I was really interested in coming back to was the question of, you know, how we might do this well. I think that is a really important question. And I feel like that is compatible with asking about the aims. Do you see these as compatible, or do you think that they are really just starting at such different starting points?
I see them as starting them as such different points, but I think cross-cultural dialogue is very important in the field of philosophy of education as I know it and as I was trained in. This sort of dominance of the Western philosophy literature, to me, is a quite concerning aspect of it. And so I would love to see the field sort of incorporate more global perspectives into the discourse and really figure out what the relationship is between the what question and the how question.
On ABC Radio National and ABC Listen, this is The Philosopher's Zone with me, David Rutledge, and a panel discussion this week on the aims of education. Leading the discussion is Laura D'Olimpio from the University of Birmingham. She's talking with Nin Kirkham from the University of Western Australia, Sam Sterrett from Scotch College in Perth, and Kaya Lee from the University of Hong Kong.
Move on to our second main question now, and I'm going to start with Sam from the sort of teacher perspective here. When we're thinking about your answer as education or schooling, you should aim more at wonder, How might that impact on what we do in the classroom? How might that impact on assessments? Do you think that might change what we do quite radically if we took your answer seriously?
Yeah, I think as far as assessment's concerned, we need to get away from the more standardised, regimented version of assessment in schools. And I think we need to embrace far more choice and direction for students to find their own path towards what they want to learn. And philosophy is a great one for that. I teach a Year 9 and 10 elective class, and we're able to have a huge amount of flexibility with the way I assess those students. So they can go off in all sorts of directions. And the community of inquiry is a fantastic pedagogy. It's kind of the best pedagogy I've seen in the classroom as far as allowing for that pursuit of wonder and different perspectives. And it's just absolutely beautiful to watch students literally flourishing in those conversations, in the discourse they have, the way they treat each other, the different perspectives they bring to the table as a vehicle for fostering wonder. That's kind of my go-to pedagogy. But more broadly, yeah, I think we need to allow students to pursue their own learning more than we currently do. I think the framework, I think there's a lot of pretty revolutionary schools out there now that are trying to do things. I've seen some in the States where it's 2 hours of AI-assisted learning on curriculum, and then the rest of the day is spent doing project-based learning and workshops and experiential learning. So there's all these experiments going on around the world, but I think fundamentally for me it's like, you know, what you intrinsically enjoy and learn and want to learn is so important, rather than us forcing students to learn a whole bunch of stuff.
I have a slight worry that assessment would work against wonder. I mean, I know people say, well, you know, if we need to check if we're doing what we say we're doing. We need assessment of some kind. But I really sort of push against this idea and think, you know, I'd love to get rid of assessment entirely and just have a rigorous pass-fail system. But I'm wondering, do you think that assessment could still be supportive of this aim at wonder, this aim at curiosity?
I think it can. I think we've seen, I mean, I've got evidence from that in some of the classrooms, some of the assessments that we run. For example, we look at the matrix in our Year 9 philosophy class, and students get a chance to explore 16 different philosophers and how they apply in that film. I think as long as there's enough, you know, it's not too constrained and there's lots of ways to demonstrate your learning and avenues to go down. You might want to study Nietzsche versus Kant, you know, in within the context of that fun film. I think there's enough room for all that wonder as long as the assessments have enough variety in them and opportunities for kids to pursue different paths within the assessment. A lot of other assessments that I've had to deal with are far too regimented in a high school setting and do inhibit wonder.
I'm going to move now to Nin and ask this second question, which is this idea of if we're aiming at flourishing and autonomy, I'm really curious about the argument for teaching philosophy and ethics in schools in connection to that goal.
Okay, so I've always had some latent reservations about teaching philosophy and ethics to children, and the reservations are about how you do it in a way that doesn't end up being a kind of indoctrination, I guess. So how you get young people to, in some sense, emulate and practice the core skills and dispositions of philosophy without ending up kind of giving them an explicit moral education or explicit, maybe philosophy is easier, but ethics is really, really hard, I think, to do well. So for young people, I think it's a lot about showing them how to be an ethical person with integrity and so on, so that they can absorb those things through what they see rather than have them explicitly taught to them. But, you know, as I say, it's very difficult to have explicit teaching of that as your goal. And I think as well, the other aims of education get massively in the way, because ultimately, as Sam's pointed out, with, you know, assessment, and certainly in high schools, it becomes an end in itself. It really does dominate the way that the curriculum is taught, certainly in the year 11 and 12 in our state. You know, everything, am I being unfair, everything is taught to the test. So it really focuses the students in a way on the assessment outcomes in a way that does start to erode their capacity to build themselves as human beings or something like that, in the way that Sam was talking about.
Yeah, and bringing in Kaya now as well, thinking about some of the important points you've made, distinctions you've drawn, I was interested in this multiculturalism that you have already referred to and how we might educate, you know, for this global world that we live in a multicultural way. Do you want to add some more thoughts to this?
Well, we talked about assessment, and in the international education scene, I think PISA, the OECD designed international assessment, is such a big topic and has long been criticized. And my dissertation is about how educational measurement fundamentally is a value question. Mm. So there is this underlying value that which then promotes certain type of measurement, and then which then produces certain type of outcomes, right? Measurement in psychometrics perspective is also like a sorting mechanism. So like, what value would you have to design this sorting mechanism? And in the multicultural society, I think there should be a respect for plurality of values. And so things like autonomy and wonders, I think those are great. But also there is some concern coming in from sort of like Eastern sort of ontologies and traditions that like, that doesn't really culturally resonate with people that are so-called in the global South spheres or non-Western countries and or developing countries. So I think there should be some sort of like knowledge exchange and also value exchange. And these sort of value-laden assessment designs should be conducted with plurality of cultures respected.
That's a great point. Thank you.
Can I ask something about
that?
Sure, yeah. So when you say that we should design our assessment with respect to values, and I think you're absolutely right about that, and maybe we should expand the level of inclusion of different kinds of value systems in doing that. I think I agree with that too. But isn't part of answering the question about, you know, what the values are, doesn't that come down to a kind of what is the purpose of education? Mm. Like a what question?
Oh,
so how does that interact with your original point about, you know, the importance to the Western system of the what question, but not, I mean, even by doing that, we'd be asking the wrong question to get the values of the Global South into the procedures.
So the very idea of measuring learning outcome itself is a product of something that OECD came up with, right? And in the history of OECD's development of PISA and all these metrics, you see lots of NATO countries and experts from NATO countries represented in these committee meetings and so on and so forth. And so maybe within those sort of ecosystem, right, then of course it will be predicated on answering the what question. Yeah. And I'm not clear whether sort of a truly pluralistic assessment design would come up with something like PISA. So I am finding myself sort of being the classic academic of like, well, it's a bit more complicated than you know.
But I mean, it's a sort of thing where the answer might require, say, rebuilding PISA from the ground up or having a different approach to these questions. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I, as I said before, push back on this idea of the measurement. And I think that when we're talking about flourishing as the aim for me of schooling or education, it's part of an enterprise where the whole community is aiming at this ultimately. And we are a small but, you know, essential part of that goal. And so I tend to think that, you know, flourishing is a lifelong endeavor. We never know if we're meeting it. And at times, you know, we won't. Aristotle didn't think many people would meet that goal at all, but he said you could only tell once the life is lived. But I still think it's a useful thing to guide us to aim towards and to want our students and, you know, young people to head towards that. And so for me, it's about the journey and it guiding and helping us to live well in the world with each other. And those skills are valuable in and of themselves. So far have dodged the assessment question myself, but I feel like if I'm serious about this answer, which I'm starting to write about as well, I'm going to have to think about this. I'm going to have to answer it.
So I totally agree with you in making the point that the education system, you know, whichever part we're talking about, primary, secondary, tertiary, sits in a broader ecosystem of what our society is trying to do with our young people, which is effectively we're trying to raise them and make them part of our society and give them a life. right? So we do that more or less well, you know, depending on how you look at it. It's certainly not a perfect system, but it's a system, you know, that to some extent works. I think the system in, particularly in Australia, and I think probably in the US and the UK, at the tertiary level has been somewhat caught up in other aims that maybe erode our capacity to do that as well as we might. But I think ultimately, you know, that's what we're all engaged in. How you assess it, it's really, really hard. I mean, you can assess, you know, whether someone's learnt the content of the course that they're in more or less well. But those broader social goals, I suppose you look at your society and see how it's going. And it, you know, most answers to most questions depend on what you look at.
Yeah, so designing the well-being measure, of course, is such a complicated business. But also, I think what we do with the measure is also a very important thing to consider. And here's the point where, you know, I would like to go back to my previous point about conflation between education and schooling. Well-being measure, I think in principle is a great idea. I do care about more than test scores. That being said, if you include things like, I don't know, like a subjective happiness or whether they feel sense of wonder or their mental health, that also creates a culture of expecting too much out of schooling or potentially overburdening schools and school teachers with additional tasks. And school teachers, in my understanding, everywhere are already overworked. So that carries a danger. And then, but on the other hand, depending on what we do with this well-being measure, it could also create a new policy paradigm where things that we don't traditionally associate with education is now considered as an education policy. For instance, I think a lot of environmental policy should be construed as a child development policy. Environmental pollution affects child development, right? So it's not just about the environment, it's about human development in general and especially vulnerable children. And if well-being measures can include a metrics like that and actually sort of task non-schooling entities or non-schooling related policies with actual sort of well-being related responsibilities, then I think that will be, you know, a wonderful paradigm to have. So it really depends on what we do with the measure.
Kaya Lee, Assistant Professor in Philosophy of Education at the University of Hong Kong. You also heard Nin Kirkham, Deputy Head of the School of Humanities at the University of Western Australia, and Sam Sterrett, who's a philosophy teacher at Scotch College in Perth and co-host of the educational podcast The Range Project. They were speaking at the recent conference of the Philosophy of Education Society of Australasia, held at Edith Cowan University in Perth, and the panel host was Laura D'Olimpio, who's a Associate Professor of Philosophy of Education at the University of Birmingham. And that is it from the Philosopher's Zone for another week. You can stream or download this episode along with past episodes on ABC Listen. The Philosopher's Zone is produced on Bundjalung Country by me, David Rutledge, and it's been a pleasure to have your company this week. See you next time.